Hi, thanks for joining us today. It's my privilege to welcome you to our first webinar in a series of three. This is made available through a grant from the CDC and Project Firstline. We have three sessions that will be ongoing, and I hope that you will join us for the future sessions as well. It's my privilege to introduce our speaker today. Her name is Cassie Milnes. Cassie received her BSN in 2009 and an MSN in 2014. She has practiced in pediatrics, medicine, labor and delivery, postpartum, and infection prevention. She's been in the infection prevention role in a 392-bed acute care hospital for the past 10 years. Cassie loves to teach and serves as a part-time clinical instructor for CMU during the school year. On three occasions, Cassie's had the privilege of speaking at the National APIC Conference and once at the Magnet Conference. What she enjoys most about her infection prevention role is that it's never a dull moment. So please join me in welcoming Cassie.
Hey, everybody. Thank you guys for coming today. I just want to start out by saying happy International Infection Prevention Week to everybody in that field. I hope you guys are doing something to celebrate your organizations. I just want to start out with my favorite organism that I have here in my hand and ask you guys to put in the chat if you can name what organism this is. And to give you a hint, this is the organism that is most frequently a cause of a caudy. So if you could see this little bug, you want to put in the chat what organism you think this is. This is my favorite one because it's the cutest.
Well, it's all quiet out there, Cassie. I'm not sure that they recognize your little bug.
Anybody have any guess?
I might take a stab at it and guess that it would be E. coli.
It is E. coli. It is E. coli. I know. I always tell my clinical students and the nurses that I teach, I was like, you would not want this in your urethra. It does not seem fun. Thank you, Kim. Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started. And you can see my slides, correct? I just want to confirm. Thank you guys for joining us today. This is the first session of the Recognizing Risk Using Reservoir series, as Kim mentioned. Before we begin, I would just like to ask if anyone feels comfortable, please share your video. So just to quickly review the agenda for today, we're going to talk about recognizing risk and what that is, how risk is different in healthcare, where is the risk for germs to spread in healthcare? And then at the end, we'll kind of bring it all together. So first, we'll start with recognizing risk. So thinking about the question of what risk is and maybe how you recognize it, can you think of a time when you've identified a risk at work or maybe at home and you took action to prevent something from going wrong? And more so, maybe how did you know it was a risk? Is it something you've had experience with in the past or something you've learned? So I would like for you guys to put some answers in the chat or you can unmute and share your example as well. So just give me some examples of the time you've identified a risk and how you knew it was a risk.
Can you repeat the question, please?
I sure can. So think about a time that you've identified a risk at work or even at home, and then an action you took to prevent it from going wrong. So some examples, I can give you some examples. So some non-healthcare examples might be you see a toddler climbing on a table and you go take them off so they don't fall. Or you slow down when you're driving and you see a dog on the side of the road or a deer and you slow down because you don't want to hit the animal. Or you turn the pot of the handle away from you on the stove so it doesn't get knocked off. So those are just some non-healthcare examples. Maybe some healthcare examples would be, I don't know, related to COVID-19. So since the pandemic, some of the risks that people see and things, actions they take to prevent it now would be maybe wearing a mask when they're in an office setting, when they go see the doctor particularly, or when they go to the grocery store, things like that. So just, I know you guys see risk every day in what you do. So just wanting you to share an example in the chat. Or again, you could come off mute and share it that way too.
Continue to distance when out in the public.
Yes. I think that's more accepted now, and I don't think people maybe will frown upon that as much anymore. I think there's certainly people that may, but in general, I think it's just accepted practice. Just like seeing people wear a mask now, that's something they choose to do, and that's an accepted practice.
B. Martin says, putting on non-slip socks on a resident that often falls. That's a good one.
Yes, perfect. Yeah, I don't sit on the fall committee in our hospital, but we have a whole safety, patient safety team that works for falls, and that is one of the things that we use in our facility as well, to prevent falls in patients. Any other examples? Move on.
Wet floor, why is it wet? What is the liquid fall risk? Thanks,
Yes.
Julie.
Thank you, Julie. Yeah, and for example, hopefully in your settings, the environmental services team or whoever is cleaning the floor is putting down signs to identify people of that risk that it is a wet floor. So those are things that we see like every day out and about. So those are good examples.
Cheryl says, I'm the school nurse and I do hearing and vision screenings every year in September and October. And I get sick every year when they're in my face. They are special needs and medically fragile 3 to 5 year olds. Thanks,
Yes,
Cheryl.
it's respiratory season, right? And they're right in your face. So yeah, definitely something you might do in that situation if you don't do already is probably wear a mask during some of that since you're so close to those little children, those little precious children. Thank you. So yeah, so those were all really great examples. So thank you guys for putting that in the chat. I appreciate it. So a simple definition of risk is just seeing the potential for a problem that could happen. Seeing a problem doesn't mean necessarily that it will happen or even that it won't happen. It's just identifying the potential for a problem. And you guys, in some of your examples, you identified that there's a potential problem like the wet floor. So potentially you could fall because it's a wet floor and maybe they put up a floor sign before a real problem happened. So and that's what risk recognition is. We do it every single day. We act on it every single day. And most of the time, the things we do it without even thinking about it. Some of it is just second nature. So I think that's maybe why sometimes it might be hard to think of risk recognition on some of the things that happen every single day that we just naturally do to prevent ourselves from getting hurt or someone else getting hurt. So this on this next slide, we're going to watch a brief clip from the CDC that shows some of these ideals in action. So I'm going to play this video for you.
You deal with risks every day at work. Think about times when you're mopping up a spill, checking a medicine dose, or when you see a wobbly patient about to fall. You see a possible problem that could hurt a patient, and you take action. You can use this same process of recognizing risk when it comes to infection control in healthcare. If you learn to spot the opportunities for germs to spread, then you can step in and take action to stop the spread of germs. So, why are we so focused on germs in healthcare? The risk for germs to spread is different than it is at home and in the community. There's a higher chance for germs to spread in healthcare settings than, for example, a grocery store, because it's where patients who are sick come for care, and patients who are already weak or ill are likely to be more vulnerable to infection. Healthcare is also unique because some of the things healthcare workers do as part of giving care can put patients at risk of infection, like starting an IV. Sometimes we are the opportunities for germs to spread. We interact with a lot of people throughout the day. We touch a lot of things and we use many different kinds of equipment. And these are all ways we can spread germs. All of this is why we have to think about infection control in healthcare differently than we think about infection control in the community.
So the concepts of recognizing risk when we're at work in healthcare, like seeing the potential for a patient to fall, like someone had mentioned putting socks on them, also apply to infection prevention. When there's a risk for germs to spread, you do certain things to prevent that. So, for example, you do hand hygiene, you might wear PPE, you'll disinfect high touch surfaces like doorknobs and light switches, for example. So thinking further about the concept or idea of recognizing risk, can you think of a time specifically at work when you recognize a risk of germs to spread, whether that's contact through the air, through droplets? And can you identify what that risk was and maybe what you've done to stop the risk of those germs from spreading? So if you could please put those answers in the chat, and then Kim will share with me what those answers are. Just give me a couple examples. I know a lot of you work in healthcare, so these are some easy, there's some easy answers out there for this. Like, in every day in healthcare, we see infection prevention risks. I will give an example while you guys are thinking and typing your answers. So, as I mentioned, I also teach clinicals at the same organization that I work at. And I was teaching clinicals recently on a patient care unit and realized they didn't have hand sanitizer outside their rooms in the hallways. They were all just in their room. So every time I come out of a room, I had to do hand hygiene with the alcohol foam that was inside the room and then hold it in my hand, shut the door, and then do hand hygiene. So I recognize, like, if I'm struggling to get hand hygiene done, I'm assuming, and I'm infection prevention, so I know I'm being way more mindful than probably most people are about it, then it's probably just not getting done or done well. So to fix that, we're adding 40 new hand sanitizer machines or dispensers outside the rooms so that there's the opportunity for them to do hand hygiene and ultimately hopefully prevent the risk of germs spreading. So that's just one recent example of what I've done in our organization.
So Janet says an ill child came into the clinic and all the staff caring for the child wore masks while caring for the family. That's a good one to stop the spread. And Cheryl says, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that's perfect. Thank you.
Cheryl says, wear gloves when the staff bring a kiddo to me that is bleeding.
Yes. Yes. And I think sometimes it's a natural instinct to, like, you would just want to help without donning your PPE first, but always protect yourselves. And I'll talk more in a minute about the risk of transmission. But I think we focus a lot on how we spread infection to patients, but we have to be mindful not to spread infection to ourselves either. I don't want my team members taking things home for themselves or to their family members. So I always tell them the reason that we do what we do for PPE and isolation and hand hygiene is really to protect them so that they're not taking an illness home to their family. So if at all possible, always protect yourself first and then intervene to assist. So thank you.
Nadina says surveillance rounds of percentage of hand washing with all staff with low rate of pass, re-education need for the staff with increased audit monitoring until compliant rate increased.
I love that. And I love that you got some real data that shows it was low, because oftentimes I know what we see at our facility, our hand hygiene rates are like in the 90%. And I know that's probably not accurate because the data says that I feel like the most recent literature from the CDC is like we about 50% of the time we don't do hand hygiene when we're supposed to. So I truly believe that it's not typically 90%. So kudos to you guys for taking action on seeing something low and then taking action and making it higher.
Julie says not washing hands long enough, have reminder signs by the sink, or list a song you can sing while you're washing your hands. So length of time for the hand washing.
Oh, I love that you guys put something up, like a song or something, to help with the length of time, because it is hard, because it's supposed to typically be 15 to 20 seconds. And in our fast-paced environments in healthcare, I don't think that's always done. So I think that's a pretty fair statement. I encourage our team, if possible, to use actually hand sanitizer instead. Certainly, I know there's times when you have to use soap and water, because the risk with C. diff, norovirus, if you have physically soiled hands, you have to use soap and water, right? But outside those times, that's when I encourage to use alcohol foam, because it's usually much faster. But I like that innovative idea of putting up signs for length of time. That's not something we've thought of doing here, because I agree, when I watch people wash their hands, it's not for the recommended amount of time. And then if they're not doing it the recommended amount of time, they're also not likely getting all the surfaces on their hand. I think the literature says we miss our thumbs like 78% of the time, is the article I read. It's from a few years ago, but we miss our thumbs all the time. So when I'm teaching nurse residents and new nurses and techs and PCO, we go over hand washing, and I talk a lot about getting their thumbs. We also miss our fingertips a lot, and I can't remember the percent behind it, but it's kind of a low percent that we get our fingertips. So yeah, thank you. Okay.
There's a response staff wearing masks incorrectly. Complete correct demonstration of proper way to wear a mask and to frequent how to audit the frequency for correction.
Was that a question or just a statement? Sorry.
No, it's a statement about it was
Okay.
another audit about wearing a mask correctly.
Oh, thank you. We put out education, particularly in the fall, but obviously throughout COVID we did. But that is a huge pet peeve of mine, is seeing a mask below the nose. I'm like, you're not doing anything there. I mean, you're breathing out of your nose too. So kudos to your hospital organization and wherever you work for tackling that, because we've tried to make it a standard at our organization that every leader should have the ability and the confidence to stop and correct someone when they're wearing a mask incorrectly, and it shouldn't just be on infection prevention to do that correction. So we had a big kind of come kumbaya last fall because we were getting so frustrated with incorrect mask wearing, but we certainly didn't do any audits. So I have to keep that in mind this year as we come into respiratory season. Sorry, I'm just writing a couple things down for myself. Is there any other comments, Kim?
So that's it for now.
Okay, thank you. So now we're just going to talk just briefly about why healthcare is different. So when we think about spreading germs in healthcare, it's helpful to remember that healthcare, our setting, is unique. And then there's unique challenges for infection prevention in the setting. We think about healthcare much differently than we think about maybe the spread of germs in our own homes, for example. And the reason why is patients come to us sick. So they're coming to us with infections already. And oftentimes they also are coming to us immunocompromised. So they're already at higher risk for spreading an organism, but also sometimes at higher risk for getting an organism or getting worse infection because they're immunocompromised. So, and in addition to that, a lot of the things that we do during patient care actually increase their risk of getting an infection. So, a common example I can think of is starting an IV. So, if that site's not prepped correctly, you're going to introduce skin right into the bloodstream. Similarly to an indwelling urinary catheter, there's a risk if you don't prep the site well, you're going to introduce bacteria into the urethra. I'm sorry, I stopped and I paused because I was thinking we just did a risk assessment. This, not a risk assessment, we did a gap analysis this week on catheter insertions. So we had some nurses place catheters on some anatomical models, and 75% of the time the team was not prepping the perineal area prior to using betadine. And so if you don't get all that bioburden off, you're not cleaning the site well, it's just going to attach to the catheter and move up the catheter and cause an infection. So the rep actually used an analogy saying you have to sweep before you mop. So it was kind of a funny analogy and I kind of like it. So this is specific to catheter insertion, so I'm getting a little off topic, but that's just a risk of infection. As I said earlier, E. coli is the number one risk of getting a catheter associated infection. So that's just another risk that we give to patients when they come in. We put devices in them and put them at higher risk of getting an infection. So it's our job to know those risks and do everything we know how to prevent it. The work that we do in healthcare provides a lot of opportunities to spread germs. And as I kind of alluded to before, it's not just germs to patients, but also to us as team members and also visitors in our organizations. So we typically have closer interactions with patients than we would maybe in a community setting in the grocery store, or things like that. I mean, we're in patients' personal space. We're giving them baths, we're doing assessments, we're doing oral care, things like that. And then also as healthcare workers, especially like an organization like a hospital or a nursing home setting, we're going from room to room, from patient to patient. So the opportunity to spread those germs is much more risky than in a different kind of setting, like in a community type setting, like a grocery store and things like that. So these are all reasons why infection prevention is different in healthcare than other settings, as I've talked about. So that's why it's all the more important to recognize the risk in healthcare to prevent those harm from happening to our patients. So where is the risk for germs to spread in healthcare? So I'm going to show three different scenarios coming up in just a second. So we've talked about the recognizing risk in general. We've talked about how healthcare has higher risk for germs to spread. Now we're going to identify and discuss some infection control risk in these next three scenarios that I'm going to show you. So I want you to look at the pictures and identify the risk for germs to spread in the pictures that I'm going to show you. And the goal is not for you to name every possible risk in the scene, but just to recognize some real-world risks and scenarios that you might see. So you can either jot your ideals down in your participant booklet, or you can share them in the chat, or you can also unmute and share them with the group if you want. So let's go. So here's the first picture. So what do you see in this scene, and what are the risks? If you could just put in the chat or share aloud, and Kim will let me know if you put something in the chat. It's probably a very common scenario
Pen
currently and
and
way to go to.
clipboard.
Pen and clipboard. Oh man, yes. I don't think we think about those inanimate objects like we should sometimes. Like during COVID, we got really good at having a clean set of pens and dirty set of pens, but that is, I think, gone by the wayside again. And it's probably because of what I do, but I think all the time about the pens I use when I go to the doctor's office, and I'm always looking for hand sanitizer when I'm done with the pen.
Well, we've got lots of things. Ill-fitting mask, coughing into the hand, and then Trish says, arm of the chair.
Yes, so you're right. So this patient looks like they're sick, like they don't feel well, probably have a respiratory infection. You're right, like the mask has gaps here, so the droplets are likely expelling that way, coughing into her hand. So I teach our team members at our organization that you do the vampire cough or sneeze into the crook of your elbow and not into your hands. If you're in my type of role, if you just sit around occasionally, just watch how people cough and sneeze, you would probably be amazed at how many people bring their hands right to their face and do it. Yes, in the chair and any other objects outside of where she's sitting that she's coughed and sneezed on. So she touched the pen and she's going to touch the chair. Then the next person's going to come and sit there and use those same objects. They're going to touch the chair. And so then we have the risk for spread of infection. So I think sometimes people think that respiratory viruses are not spread by touching it necessarily, that it's always through droplets. While primarily that is spread by droplets most of the time, you can certainly get it by picking it up off the surfaces and then touching your mouth, nose, or eyes and get it that way. So, I mean, I'm grateful she has a mask on. I'm not, I'm super, that makes my heart happy. But could be a little bit done a little bit better. So, thank you guys.
Sue says high touch areas.
Yes, and I'm wondering, can you guys tell me if you work in a setting where patients come in like this and are waiting around, like what are some things you guys do, maybe between patients or routinely throughout the day to decrease the risk of spread of infections in settings like this? Can you put your answers in the chat? I'm genuinely interested to know. And then I can share, I think, what is supposed to happen at our organization.
Mariah says, wipe the armrests of chairs during my downtime.
And I think we have team members in clinics that are so good at that. And I'm speaking specifically to our clinic setting, but some of our front of the line people in the clinics, they go out and wipe them down when they can. So,
Sue adds, sanitize doorknobs, counters, and other areas that are frequently touched. Janet says hand sanitizer and masks at patient check-in. And Cheryl says sometimes we have multiple kids in the office waiting, So we wipe the cots in between each kiddo. Karen says daily cleaning, access to masks, sanitizers, and tissues, we are reducing the number of trash cans overall.
Yeah, these are similar to, I think, what a lot of organizations do, especially in like waiting room type settings. So I think I'm thinking of our ER. I think our clinics probably do a better job at cleaning between our cleaning when they can during their downtime, cleaning the waiting rooms is what I'm getting at. I have a strong feeling that our ED doesn't have that done as frequently. We try to tell our EVS team if they can swing through there a few times a day, that would be wonderful, but it's so busy oftentimes in the ER, there's not a lot of time where those chairs might be empty to get wiped down. So it makes me really nervous. Again, I think back during the pandemic, we did so good. We did so good that we were actually damaging our equipment because we were wiping them down so frequently. So I actually had some bad side effects from that, but now I think it's kind of gone to the wayside again and it's not done as frequently. So definitely keep that in mind, specifically as we come into respiratory season and some of those high touch surfaces and those real busy areas that aren't able to be cleaned as much, and like work with your teams in determining how those can be touched more on a routine basis to prevent the spread of infection. Okay, I'm going to share the next picture. So here's another, what risk do you see here?
Bruce says open wound, and SR King says kid picking at an open area.
Yeah, and that's our primary concern with this picture in this scenario. Germs can be spread from that patient's blood, from their wound to other surfaces in the waiting area. It's not covered. I have a kid, so I feel like I can say this, but sometimes they're not always conscious about what they're touching from, you know, maybe he's touching the blood and then touching other things. So this kind of goes back to what I was saying about high touch surfaces being wiped down frequently, because whatever this kid might have in their blood could be transferred to somebody else through mucous membranes or through their wound, whatever that. So similar example, but different kind of exposure risk. And then I have just one more. This is another scene. There's no patients in this scene, but are there any infection risks that you can see? The answer is yes. But what are they? This is an IP's nightmare if I were to walk into a room and see this.
Overflowing trash can, overfilled sharps, gloves, trash, cotton balls. Think.
Yeah. All of it. I think another thing I see is all these clean supplies around the sink. I think is a pet peeve of mine, how many things get splashed with contaminated water and then we use them. So we try to really enforce like dirty and clean areas and having it's something at least 3 feet away from the sink when possible. And that's not always possible. And I totally understand that. So sometimes space is very, very limited. So you can install like splash guards, things like that to prevent the spread of infection to reduce that risk. Because we see all the time like water stain supplies, and I don't know how many, if we were to culture that, how many germs would be on that. Another thing that stuck out to me here was the key in the sharps container. Like someone can just open that sharps container and just empty it out, which I don't know if that was supposed to be a risk identified, but to me, you wouldn't leave a key there. But, and I think there's also a needle in the trash from what I can see. So any other things that
hand pump, soap dispenser, and the counter is a mess.
Oh, it's terrible. Like, this just makes me sick to my stomach. And I think this group, I think we wear a different lens. When we go into places, we look at things so differently than most. So if you're anything like me and wear those lenses, like, this would just, like, make your skin crawl. And thinking of this, go ahead.
Sue suggests install shelves for the supplies that are on the sink counter.
And we have done that. I know in some of our clinics, so I don't know if that's something others have done in their settings, but I know space is so limited. And then they also aren't supposed, sorry, supposed to store things underneath the sink because it's a risk of getting wet. So that's a whole space that feels wasted. But I also have seen things flood and get wet and moldy under there. So there's a good reason for it. But everyone's like, that's such wasted space. So, yeah. Okay. Thank you guys. I think you hit all the things that came to my mind when I looked at this picture. So lastly, just bringing it all together. You did a great job of recognizing the risk and the different scenarios that I shared. So as you reflect on the different infection risks that we've talked about, just think about your workday and can you recognize one risk for germs to spread that's a part of your daily work if you've not shared already? And one step further, when you have recognized that risk, what is one thing you can do or you have done to take action to prevent an infection from potentially occurring or germs from spreading? So then lastly, just want to thank you for your time and your attention today. And I hope that you can take some of the examples given from some of the participants on the call of things you can do to prevent the spread of infection in your organizational setting. And some of the key takeaways from today's presentation is that you understand risk recognition is seeing in the potential for a problem to happen, that you can help control infections in healthcare by learning to recognize what those risks are in that setting and not letting it happen. And then thirdly, understanding that healthcare is a unique setting and we should consider germs differently in this setting than we do in other situations and other populations. Lastly, I just want to share some sites that you can go to. Project FirstLine has a suite of products and resources that you can use to recognize risk of infection at your work, whatever that looks like for you. There's also links to follow them on social media if you would choose to do that. Next time in session two, we're going to talk about how germs make people sick. That's the topic for next time. So thanks again for joining us today, and I will see you guys, I believe, in December. Thank you.
Thank you, Cassie.
Thank you guys. Bye.